Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we are broadcasting live from the Diego Rivera Theater at the City College of San Francisco's main campus. Thank you all for coming. California is home to some of the best higher education institutions in the country, and they're a crucial economic catalyst for the state. But ongoing budget cuts has led to higher tuition, the elimination of courses and services, and a freeze in enrollment. Because of $500 million in cuts in the past year alone, California's 112 community colleges have turned away more than 300,000 students. California Community Colleges Chancellor Jack Scott recently announced that budget cuts have resulted in a 17% drop in enrollment at the state's community colleges over the past 3 years. If Governor Jerry Brown's tax initiative, Prop 30, does not pass in November, education will face another $338 million cut. So what does this mean for the future of the state of California? How are college students coping, and what's in store for them upon graduation? We're talking about all colleges, from City College to the private schools. According to a new AP analysis, half of young college grads are either jobless, underemployed in positions that do not use their skills, or barely scraping by in low-wage jobs. The situation in the Bay Area in Northern California is luckily somewhat better than that. Today, we are going to talk about this with career development experts and a paramedic program director. Today we are joined by Daniel Newell, job development and marketing specialist at San Jose State University Career Center. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having us.
We're also joined by Alex Hockman, assistant director of career services at the University of San Francisco. Welcome back, Alex.
Hi, Rose. Thank you.
Great to see you. And Megan Corey is the paramedic program director and primary instructor here at City College of San Francisco. Hi, Megan.
Hi, it's great to be on campus.
Great to have you. Well, Megan, since we are on your campus, why don't you start off by talking to us about what you're hearing from students right now in terms of what's facing them when they graduate?
Well, we have a very diverse group of students. I'm in the Department of Healthcare Technology, so I run the paramedic program, and we have within our department EMT and pharmacy technician, cardiovascular technician, medical assisting, health information technology. And these are all booming fields. The allied health field is a very expanding, exploding field. So our job market looks very good, very promising.
It's a good job market.
Yes, we do have a very good job market. And you can see that actually Nancy Schulock in the state report from the Institute of Higher Education and Policy Research, they note that allied health careers happen to be one of the areas where we see an incredibly booming market.
And what are you seeing, Alex, at the University of San Francisco?
Yes, similarly, I think the market's improved quite a bit over the last few years, locally at least. The students who I was working with in 08, 09, even if they did everything right, meaning lots of internships, lots of, you know, making sure their resumes were perfect, great grades, nothing was happening for those students. And that same student today, most of those students in the class of 2012 at USF got jobs.
What kind of jobs?
I think a great example is lots of local startups, so Square, Uber, these cool, you know, companies that have grown overnight, kind of like back in the 90s, but it seems like they're doing it a tad more carefully. And they're providing lots of jobs. And what I love is that it's not just for our undergraduate business population who stayed somewhat strong during the recession, but we're seeing liberal arts majors getting jobs with some of the smaller startups.
Because Silicon Valley is still booming, and Twitter recently opened its offices in San Francisco. Dolby's moving there. So are a lot of students gravitating towards those jobs?
Yeah, and I'll toot USF's horn and say it's not Silicon Valley that's booming. It's San Francisco is where technology is going now. There's no room left in Silicon Valley.
And that's why they're moving downtown.
Yeah, which helps our students greatly.
And what about you, Daniel? What are you seeing at San Jose State?
Well, earlier, Rose, you mentioned that college students are facing a bleak college market. And in Silicon Valley, we're seeing a boom, as everyone is stating. And although generally on a national scale or even statewide, although the economy and the unemployment rate are within margins that are not necessarily categorical of a healthy economy, I do feel it's very important for us to state that the trends we're seeing in job creation, job availability, and unemployment are positive.
So can you give us more examples?
Yeah, sure.
And
so
be more specific?
In comparison to last fiscal year, San Jose State University Career Center has experienced an approximately 30% increase in job openings being marketed to our students through our job database.
And did you also have a lull back in about 2008, 2009? Was it harder for students back then?
Obviously, after the recession, it was definitely difficult, and we're seeing the job market steadily coming back. But I would say in the past 18 months, that boom has been very significant and very strong, and I think we're going to continue to ride this out for some time.
And Megan, why don't you jump in here and talk a little bit about the programs here, and what's in terms of demand? What are students gravitating towards?
Oh, sure. In terms of demand, like applicants to the programs, we typically have waiting lists to actually get into the programs. But one of the things that Allied Health Careers provide are pathways as well. Pathways, most provide associate's degrees, and then pathways to other associated careers, careers in healthcare and outside of healthcare, mostly within healthcare. The other thing is to keep in mind that one of the reasons that our, if you want to call it job placement rate or involvement in the local job market is so great is because of our ties with the community itself. So I think that's one of the things, and it's one of the most important parts of a community college is the we engage our students in the civic and social fabric of the community. So I think that's a really important part of our programs and our continued involvement in the local community.
Do you also have similar relationships?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, definitely. San Jose State, we have expanded into the community. We are developing significant community relationships and partnerships, and many of these are, these relationships are evolving into internships, into service learning opportunities, and we're able to connect our students to different channels and outlets to help get their foot in the door and to develop the skill sets necessary.
And how are you preparing students for this sort of different world that we're in right now? Because the majority of jobs, and I'm sure this is not in Silicon Valley or San Francisco, well, in some cases, but probably not the students you're working with, are low-wage jobs with no benefits, temp jobs, for example, and the era of working at a company for maybe even 3 years is almost over. So, Alex, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise in this year's students is that that's already, you know, baked into the cake for them, versus a couple of years ago, students were really upset coming out and obviously not getting a job or getting a really low-income job. And sadly, students now, I think they've been kind of primed by their peers and parents that this is how it's going to be, so it's almost expected, whereas a student in 08, 09 was upset if they got a job that paid in the mid-30s in San Francisco, which we all know doesn't take you very far in San Francisco. Now getting a job in the mid-30s, low 40s is kind of accepted.
I think there's something a little deeper here, though. It's not just about our students don't leave, have a certificate, go get their paramedic license, and then they're gone, and we kind of find them and you know, tally up what they make. Because the job market is, it, you know, varies whether you're in the private sector or in the public sector, whether you go into a public safety career like with a fire department or whether you stay with an ambulance company or whether you do overseas relief, which I've had a student that's gone to Haiti twice. You know, how do you quantify that? It's more of a quality. So I think there's more to it. The students come back as well. They don't just disappear. They regularly come back and participate in the program itself and change the education as we go based upon what they see in the community. It's an active participatory process.
We've seen an increase in young alums wanting to be mentors for current students.
Definitely.
Which, if there's any silver lining out of the bad economy, I think it's that we really want to come back and help because we've been through it and we know how tough it is out there.
And speaking of how tough it is, how have budget cuts affected your programs and students and their sort of mental state in terms of what they think is available after college?
At USF, Alex, I think we've been okay. I mean, we're a small career services center, but we're able to serve our alums as needed. And if anything, it's been a tad easier on our office the last year or two because we're not seeing as many alums come in. So I don't feel like the budget at USF has really hurt us at all from a career services perspective.
What about San Jose State, Daniel?
Well, I think it forces us to have to stay innovative, stay creative, serving more students with less or fewer resources. And so a lot of our services have gone online. So we're still providing the one-on-one personal services, but we offer an array of webinars and workshops online that students can access. We have tons of student worksheets online that they can access, and we provide several workshops throughout the week, and then they can also come in for drop-in appointments.
Yeah, I would say definitely access issues and changing student population. If the cost of, I think it's a mistake to just look at the community college cost and say, well, it's not that bad, and then look at other states, because you're missing a few things there. In particular, in some of the allied health fields, there are other fees that are associated with it as well. Maybe internship costs and costs of purchasing, you know, scrubs or a stethoscope or whatever that goes with it. All of those things add up to accessibility problems and also a disconnect with the community that we're going to eventually serve. As EMS providers, we respond to a community, and we all know the healthcare statistics, right? That we're talking about a population in need. We know there's healthcare or outcome disparities where there's a difference between outcomes in patients with lower socioeconomic status than those who have health insurance or are able to, you know, take themselves to a physician. And that's the community that EMS providers tend to serve. And now we're going to say that we're going to only draw EMS providers from a pool of students who can afford it. And that closes the door on many of people who are going to come from a community that they're going to serve.
And that is Megan Corey. She is the paramedic program director and primary instructor here at City College of San Francisco. We're broadcasting live today from the Diego Rivera Theater. So if you're in the area, we've got a couple of seats open. Come on down and take part in the conversation. We're also going to open our microphone so we can hear from audience members. We'd also love to hear from you. We're joined by Alex Hockman, Assistant Director of Career Services at the University of San Francisco, and Daniel Newell is Job Development and Marketing Specialist at San Jose State. So what are you seeing? What changes are you seeing? Alex said just a couple of years ago, students were not really getting jobs. It was a fairly bleak market, but things are turning around. And luckily, they are now getting pretty good paying jobs. And are we also talking about benefits? I mean, if you're talking Silicon Valley type jobs, then yes.
Yes.
Right. And so what are you seeing out there if you are looking for work or if you're in a hiring position? What changes have you seen in the last couple of years? And we're really talking about California's institutions, some of the best in the country, and what is in store for the future of the state's economy. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. A report by California Competes says that over the next 13 years, California will need 5.5 million people with what they call meaningful higher degrees and certificates in science, math, and other fields to keep its competitive edge. Alex, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I grad school in 2001, and I feel like I've been hearing that number ever since
right.
then. So I tend to kind of disregard. I hear it every year.
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny that you say your competitive edge, because San Jose State University's Career Center, our motto is get your competitive edge. And so your major doesn't equal job. Each major, each concentration provides skill sets that are transferable. And it's important for students to know and to understand that, because they may have to relay that to an employer who may not necessarily understand that and say, although I have this type of degree, this is what I've learned from this curriculum, and this is how I can apply it to your job.
And if any of you in the audience would like to share your experiences or what your thoughts are as you're about to graduate, or if you've got friends who are about to graduate, please line up at the microphone. We'd love to hear from you. Megan, what are your thoughts on that report?
Well, I should say I'm also a doctorate student at the San Francisco State in Educational Leadership, so I've been learning a lot about the history. And I think it's very important that we remember the history of the whole argument of we're losing our competitive edge, which is not new. It started the workforce education programs at community colleges in the turn of the century. It came back to us after A Nation at Risk in the 80s, Sputnik. I mean, this has been an argument that's come up time and time again. So I think we need to consider the history and how we responded each time.
So is there a disconnect then between maybe state officials in Washington and what you see on the ground? in terms of this sort of competitive edge that we always hear about?
Yes,
definitely.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there absolutely is. And again, as someone who's been doing this for a while now, it feels sometimes like we're all talking a completely different language.
Yes.
And it's very clear when you hear factoids like that constantly thrown at you. I was at a great meeting last summer with local government officials who are trying to create internship opportunities for students, and it was like two different conversations going on in the same room. So yeah, it's just, I don't think they're terribly realistic as to what's really happening.
All right, so what is really happening? Because we have all of these articles about California perhaps being a failed state, what's to come in California. What are your thoughts about what's really going on then?
Well, I think part of the hope when Obama got elected in 08 was that it seemed like for a little while at least, working for the government was sexy again. And I think that's worn off pretty quickly. And I very rarely have students come into my office and say that they're interested in working for the government. And unfortunately, when they do try to work for the government, it might take 9 months to get a resume through to an interview, and that student's already had 6 interviews and been hired twice by the time the government gets to them. So that's part of what I'm seeing.
And what are your thoughts? What do you think that we're missing, Daniel?
Well, I do see a disconnect to an extent from the politicians to the private sector to the educational institutions. There's not necessarily enough communication happening between those entities, but there are some organizations like the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. They understand what is needed in the private sector. And what I think the issues are is not necessarily the disconnect so much, but more of the bureaucracy. We know what we need. We know how to get there, but it takes so long to get there. And by the time we get there, do we still need that?
I think what's missing is the qualitative piece. I think that we have an over-reliance, although very important, of course, on numbers. We and Allied Health have our own accreditation to go through, the Commission on the Accreditation of Allied Health Education Programs. So we've gone through where we report our statistics and we have our site visits. But the qualitative piece is embedded within the site visit. Our site visitors come out. That's what they're missing. That's what they're looking to. They're not just looking to confirm the numbers. They're looking to also catch the qualitative piece. What are the students doing? How are they? What are they gaining from their education? Not just, you know, how many jobs do they get and how much do they make?
Right. And then there's also the question of the quality of the education.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And especially with the city colleges, we hear stories about classes being cut. People cannot get the classes they need to graduate. Shorter hours, counselors being fired. So can you talk a little bit about that, how the quality of education has been affected and how this also affects students who are looking for jobs?
Yeah, and I think I can't answer to all of the aspects of I mean, this is an enormous institution. We all have our own areas. And in the area of allied health, I think we're, in a sense, for me, I feel fortunate because I'm so connected to my graduates still, and they're so connected to our program. I mean, just last week we had a day where we did environmental emergencies, and one of my current students and one of my graduates organized the day, brought in CHP helicopters, brought in a physician from Stanford, and they ran the class. Like I said, it's very participatory. They create and engage in their own education, and they give back to it. So I think we see those immediate things, and we're fortunate in that. I don't think we see that, of course, in any of the reports, and I think that's what's unfortunate. But I think other departments also have felt really the pinch. I mean, of course, the healthcare departments have felt the pinch, in particular because of having to maintain our own accreditation and needing to have that administrative support and also the support of faculty that are in the field. And you can feel that cutback, definitely. But the access for students to their general education classes, that's required for their associate's degree in paramedic as well. So that does affect them.
And we're talking about 90,000 students at City College of San Francisco. That's a lot of students.
Yeah, that is a lot of students.
What about you? What are your thoughts on the quality of education, Alex?
I think it's imperative. And one thing that I like, it seems to be a trend going on, not just at USF, but lots of local schools, is the inclusion of an almost an internship requirement in lots of classes. Now, on one hand, you might say, well, that's a student just paying to go work for free somewhere. And I totally get that argument. But more important than anything right now for an employer, really more important than a student's grade point average most of the time, is that they're graduating with some relevant experience to bring to the table. With budget cuts all around, employers don't have time to train anyone anymore, nor the patients. They want students who can sit down and start working right away. So I think when looking for an education, be looking for schools that have lots of internship opportunities, but in lots of cases, it's built into the education. And what I love is I'm seeing our history major has added an internship component, our communication major, so not just accounting, finance, nursing, which are the traditional.
Right, because I was in New York last week and took a super shuttle with a student from Stanford, and he said all of his peers basically want to work on Wall Street. They're either getting jobs on Wall Street or in Silicon Valley, very high paying jobs because Stanford has these relationships. But he didn't really even mention liberal arts.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with Alex 100%. I'm going to hitchhike off his idea that your curriculum can only be so good without the real-world experience. That's the real piece that's important, that employers really care about. How do you apply what you've learned into the real world? How do you think strategically? Because you're going to have to do that in the workplace. And we're seeing increases in our job numbers for majors that require internships. So our College of Applied Science and Arts, they're required to do internships. And I think those students walk out with a better chance of getting a job than those who don't. So even if the opportunity is service learning, volunteer work, internship, it doesn't matter. Just get some sort of experience before you leave school.
And that is Daniel Newell. He's Job Development and Marketing Specialist at San Jose State University's Career Center. Alex Hockman is Assistant Director of Career Services at the University of San Francisco. And Megan Corey is Paramedic Program Director and Primary Instructor of the City College of San Francisco Paramedic Program. And I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call, and we are live today at the Diego Rivera Theater at City College of San Francisco talking about what it looks like out there in terms of what students are facing, what jobs they're finding, and what this means for the future of California's economy. And if any of you in the audience would like to speak, we'd love to hear from you. What are you thinking right now? Please take to the microphone. What are your thoughts? What are you hearing from peers? If you can introduce yourself.
My name is Robin Ryan. I'm a library technology student here, and I'm very close to getting my certificate. The Bay Area is flooded with out-of-work librarians, and these are librarians even with master's degrees, and I'm sure that the gentleman from Bay State is very familiar with that breed of job seeker out there. So library technicians, who are definitely have lower grade of skill levels, are facing a market that's flooded with very educated librarians out of work taking those library technician positions that are available. It is virtually impossible to get your first job unless you've had a series of internships, not just one. Mm-hmm. They want you to be familiar with the software and know what you're doing before you go in. They don't have time to train you. And so my recent experience was I have so many other obligations in the world that this summer would have been the ideal time to start an internship, and because of budget cuts, they cut the summer work-study program here at City College, which is a time when a lot of students have an opportunity to go out there and put their foot in the door. And so that was one way that I was immediately affected by that. And so we just go on with whatever resources are available. But I do encourage universities, the administration, to consider that when they're doing budget cuts. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we're going to take a quick break, but please let us know you'd like to speak about what you're facing. What is it like in your program? Are you getting the classes you need? Do you feel prepared for this marketplace? And also, when we use these words marketplace, what are your thoughts on what California's economy is currently facing? And what would you like to let people know about the realities of what it takes right now to get a good paying job? Do you expect one? Do you expect benefits? We'd love you. I'm Rose Aguilar at Your Call, and we are broadcasting live today from the Diego Rivera Theater at City College of San Francisco, and we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. Rose and the Your Call team are at City College, but I'm Matt Martin here with Joe Burke, Edwin, in Studio A here at KALW, asking for your support for this kind of locally connected programming that we do here on Your Call and at KALW.
Locally connected, that connects to communities and people all over the Bay Area, across the country and around the world as well, engaging in conversations that we really need to be having with each other as we move into the 21st century. 800-525-9917. Support local public radio and its efforts to partner with our friends at City College in San Francisco. I spent a few years there in my youth studying broadcasting, curiously enough. 800-525-9917 or online, KALW.org. And so I have a vested interest in preserving City College, in preserving these institutions that people depend on here in the Bay Area.
These are institutions that provide economic opportunity. And here at KALW, we believe that information and ideas need to be here for everyone in the community. A show like Your Call convenes important conversations every day. And if you're someone who's interested in the crisis at City College, stay tuned for our second hour special coming up at 11 a.m. all about City College. Just stay with us. But right now, we're asking you to show your support for this kind of broadcasting. 800-525-9917. This is a community asset. Together, we can keep it strong. We do it one person at a time, doing what they can. Be the next person to call or click.
And we're keeping our breaks during this fall membership campaign, during the pledge drive, shorter than usual, if you appreciate our efforts to present programs in their entirety without chopping them up willy-nilly. Call now and make a pledge at 800-525-9917 or online, KALW.org.
KALW.org. You can see thank you gifts there, learn more about the station. But most importantly, if you're tuned in, you know the value of what's on 91.7 FM. Make sure it's here and strong for the future. Thanks to everyone who's supported us so far. Be the next person to call, 800-525-9917.
Or click at KALW.org. Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we are broadcasting live from the Diego Rivera Theater at City College of San Francisco. And we'd love to hear from you. Today we are talking about what students are facing upon graduation. California is home to some of the best institutions in the country. And we'd love to hear from you. If you're a student, what are your thoughts on the economy? How have things changed for you over the past couple of years? And if you're in a hiring position, or if you see people come and go, what kinds of changes have you seen? And what advice would you give to students of all ages? Because that's what makes especially community colleges great, is that you've got such a diverse range of students. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by Daniel Newell, Job Development and Marketing Specialist at San Jose State University's Career Center. Alex Hockman is Assistant Director of Career Services at the University of San Francisco. And Megan Corey is the Paramedic Program Director and Primary Instructor of the City College of San Francisco's Paramedic Program. And before we get to Diamond Dave, I just wanted you all to comment on the last comment about wanting to get a library job but couldn't get the classes, needed internships. How common are these stories?
I think we've been pretty fortunate because we're connected, so connected, although I would say that our field does wax and wane. We have experienced times where it's a much more difficult job market than others, but it seems to turn over pretty quickly. And I think she said a few key things. One was that the connections and the numbers of internships seem to matter. And the other very important thing was the need to keep up on resources. So one of the things you mentioned before was about how has the budget cuts affected us. One of the things I neglected to say was something that Robin had said, which was we need to stay cutting edge, and our fields are ever changing. We need the most current monitors, we need the most current equipment, and if we can't keep up with that, then we can't operate within the current climate.
Yeah, at San Jose State, every course is impacted, so that this story is not necessarily unique. I think, though, it is important for this particular individual to seek out if they have their a liaison available. I know San Jose State, we have a liaison employment specialist to that college in particular who can help them with their job search, provide some recommendations, and like Megan said, just know what resources are there for you.
All right, thank you. Diamond Dave.
Diamond Dave.
Hi, Diamond.
Hey, Rosemary. Thanks. Welcome to San Francisco City College.
Thank you.
The Diego Rivera. And in fact, that name Diego Rivera takes me right to my takeaway. Education in the past has also not only been there to teach people, to give people training and future jobs, but also to help them emerge as independent well-educated human beings, knowledgeable in the arts and the science and literature and able to think for themselves. And I seem to notice, and I hear from this conversation, and what I seem to be noticing that this is becoming less and less a priority, perhaps because of the cutbacks, perhaps because independent thinking human beings are no longer at the premium that they once were. And so I wanted to ask each one of you, what role you think education should play besides just training us for jobs which may or may not exist?
Great question. Thank you, Diamond Dave. Question.
I think it's a great question, and I think you kind of answered it with part of your question, which is when job markets are like they are right now, slowly improving but not fantastic, I do feel like that colleges become much more about helping students get jobs. I know that's maybe not the PC thing to say, but at the end of the day, especially at a private university, when a student's paying a lot of money, or if their parents are, or getting a lot of financial aid, I've, from a career services perspective, feel very much like it's our responsibility to try to, you know, line up as much employment as possible, for them. And from the academic perspective, I would say it's kind of more their job to worry about helping students become individual thinkers, et cetera.
Daniel?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've actually thought of this myself several times. And I think it's important that an institution have a balance of their priorities. Is this institution for personal growth and development? Are we going to focus on vocational training, skills to get you a job? And because public institutions rely on government dollars, which come from taxes, from people who work, then you're going to see more and more, I think, this trend of educational institutions focusing more on the skill set for employment.
Megan. Well, I'm going to agree with Diamond Dave that education at its root is about empowerment and self-determination. And I think all you have to do is we ask our students when they come in, why do you want to be a paramedic? Not one says to get a job, and not one even says, they may link it to, well, I'd like to eventually work for public safety or something like that. But they all have some experience of helping people where they would like to carry that forward. So I think that there's something else in there too. And from my own experience, I didn't go to school to get a job. And I went to San Francisco State and got my undergraduate and graduate degrees in physiology, and then became a paramedic at the same time. And what I gained from that was self-determination. When I decided I didn't want to be just in the field anymore, I wanted to do something more. That graduate degree allowed me some latitude to be able to say, you know, I want to be an EMS, but I don't want to work in the field anymore. I had a choice.
You know, it's such a great point, because when I met that student from Stanford who wanted to work on Wall Street, I said, so what do you want to do there exactly? He said, well, trade. I've been trading since 14. I said, what do you get out of that? I'm just curious. And he didn't really have an answer. So it's a great question. And I'm thinking back to the college days where half of my grade was based on participation. And we read so many of the classics. And I didn't take any econ classes, frankly. But it's interesting because there is more of a focus, it seems, today on what skills are you learning to then use in your employment. And I just saw a number of students walk in, and we'd love to hear from you on this question. Diamond Dave brought up a great question about, very well-rounded education, being able to think critically. There have been a lot of cuts on a lot of these sort of arts and music classes. So do you feel pressure to take classes that you might not be interested in but might get you jobs? Or do you feel like you have the flexibility to take classes that just you're taking because you enjoy them? So please come up to the microphone. We'd love to hear from you. Hi.
Hi. Anna Faculty. My name is Anna Fisher. And I once was a student here, immigrant who was learning English. And I remember I really wanted to cry when I woke up in the ASL classes and started learning at least to say, hello, how are you? And I felt so grateful. And I thought, wow, I thought I could study when I'm 30 years old. But anyway, I came when I was 28 years old. And I went through the whole program. I got my AA in early childhood development. Then I went to San Francisco State, and I was able to get my BA, and then I got my MA. But anyway, what I want to say is that we need to keep the doors open to people like me, because there are many, many hundreds of thousands of students who really want to come out, want to learn English, want to get ahead of in this society. But if we don't keep the doors open, we are shutting the doors to the people who really need it the most. What I want to say is that I teach early childhood development, and I teach in Spanish and English. And what I have seen in the last 2 or 3 years, as the units has gone up from 26 to 46 now, my classes are less and less. And I ask the students, why don't you come to my classes? I try to recruit in the community. And of course, they are working with low paying jobs. They cannot pay $45 or $46 a unit. But anyway, it is very shameful to even be here in this state that is one of the most richest in the whole world. I can't understand. Don't tell me there is no money. They don't want to educate our people. That's really shameful. California has the most richest people in the world. We have this new guy, Facebook guy. I know he gave some money to us, but it's not enough. But I think that education is a right for the human beings. It's not a debate. It shouldn't be. It's okay in my country. I came from El Salvador when we have a war, a civil war, to make things different. But anyway, I'm here just to say, let's keep the doors open. So let's give them an opportunity to the people who really need it, like me. Once I didn't even have a place to stay. Mm-hmm. But now it's different, okay?
And now you're teaching early childhood
exactly.
education.
Exactly. And parenting classes, too. And I have 72 students in one class. Wow. I have 80 in another class. So it's very emotional to me. Because what a great difference when the parents know how to raise a child instead of going into prison. But we're putting more money into prisons than education. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And a new study actually just came out looking at this fact that has gotten a lot of attention, that the state of California spends more on prisons than education. What are your thoughts on this? Because another study by the Economic and Planning Systems Incorporated found that the UC system alone is generating $46 billion in annual economic activity for the state and contributing $32 billion towards California's gross state product. That means for every dollar the California taxpayer invests in the UC system results in nearly $14 in overall economic output. So why don't we hear more about this? And why don't we hear more about these stories? That the more you put out there, the more you get back. Daniel?
Well, it's very unfortunate, the amount of money that we spend on the prison system. My stance on this is if we were to put that money up front, say in high school, transitional services, we would be able to help remedy some of these problems that we're seeing now. I would say a very large majority of individuals who are incarcerated have learning disabilities. And maybe in high school they didn't fit in, they couldn't do the work, and there were not enough support services for them, and they got entertained with other activities. So I'm an avid believer of putting up money while they're young, transition them to post-secondary education, get them a job, and we can maybe help remedy this current prison situation.
And Megan, what are your thoughts on this, and how do you talk to students about this issue?
I think in general we do, like I said earlier, have an over-reliance on numbers and not enough story to fill the gaps, not enough qualitative research findings, narratives and stories of students and success. And I agree. I think the issues of support services are large. In paramedic education, I know we are constantly discussing at the national level. There's a push for degree programs, which I think is fine, but I think it's also important that we, if you come to a paramedic program, you don't need to take a placement test. I don't think people realize that sometimes in community college, that for some of our vocational programs, you don't need to take placement tests. And I find that actually sometimes a benefit because our students learn how to do complicated drug calculations in pharmacology, you know, drip rates and weight-based calculations. And they weren't, you know, stopped before that because they had taken a test that limited a lot of debate about placement testing. But that is one example of how, maybe we can help each other in terms of basic skills and job training and how we can work together within our different areas.
And if any of you other, anyone, any students, professors here would like to talk about what you're facing and maybe even reply to the last comment we got and how are you making sense of that? I just found this study from California Common Sense. This new report was released Thursday called Winners and Losers, Corrections in Higher Education in California. And it found that higher education has seen periods of large cuts over the years. After adjusting for inflation, higher education in 2011 received 13% less state funding than it did in 1980. Corrections, on the other hand, expanded its share of the state's fund by 436%. The only significant reductions in corrections funding occurred after the 2007 recession. Alex, what are your thoughts on that?
I think crime makes the news and stories like we just heard don't. Yeah. And I think that's a big part of the problem. If you could get the right people in the room and to listen to what we just heard, I think that's something that's inspirational and certainly would help, you know, raise money for where we really need it. You're beginning to see now a lot of career centers, and we're copying UC Berkeley's career center on this one, going back to your point about numbers don't tell the story, creating success story sections on their websites so that students who are being kind of deluged with bad number after bad number can go and see, wow, these are people just like me who just got an internship or a job last month. Because we want more storytelling out there so that people can see there's more to it than just national numbers.
And that is Alex Hochman. He's Assistant Director of Career Services at the University of San Francisco. Daniel Newell is Job Development and Marketing Specialist at San Jose State. And Megan Corey is the Paramedic Program Director and Primary Instructor here at City College of San Francisco. And we are broadcasting live at the Diego Rivera Theater at City College of San Francisco. And again, I know a number of new students walked in, and we have just about 10 minutes before we have to end the show, so we would really love to hear from you about what you're facing. What are your thoughts about just the disparities in spending? How does that really make you feel? I mean, how do you kind of process all of this information? And how do you talk about this in your classes? How are you preparing for your graduation? What can we do to set these priorities straight? Please take the microphone. Don't be shy. We'd love to hear from you. So, Alex, what are your thoughts on these numbers? Because we really don't hear about the contribution that these schools are making to the state. And these are, again, for every dollar the taxpayer invests just in the UC, and it's probably higher when you look at state schools, community colleges, and then the private, well, right, private separate, but sure, in the other schools, and you're talking about they get back nearly $14 in overall economic output.
Yeah, it's a mind-blowing number when you hear it. I've never heard that number before. And also just think about names like Berkeley, UCLA, UC San Diego. These are national institutions that people recognize. It's great PR for the state of California on top of a dollar for every 14.
Daniel?
Well, Rose, the budget piece is not necessarily my strong point, but I can say we did a recent research study at San Jose State to see how many students who are still in school who utilize the Career Center services actually obtained employment. And 6 in 10 of them obtained employment and made an average of $6,000 per individual. And these are entry-level part-time jobs that they're taking just to get to college. So why I'm saying that is that I don't know how much money you give us or what is cut, but for every student that we work with that obtains employment, they make at least $6,000.
I think there's also, tying on to what you were saying about the numbers, there's also a tendency to report only certain things versus others. And one of the things, reporting the numbers, we hear about the numbers of students that amass extra units. I know that one really bothered me, I think, in the CTE report about how, why do students collect so many extra units? And what maybe they don't understand, which would be answered with a simple question to some of our programs, is that many of them are tied together. My students have the City College Fire Academy as well. Paramedic program is 53 units for just the major. If they take general education, are they going to now become one of those, you know, those students that amass extra units? So, and maybe they want to go into nursing. So they take the prerequisites for nursing as part of their general education and need a few extra units, and that pushes them over into this, you know, this extra unit category, which is, you know, now seen as, you know, lazy students or something, which I think is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other question I'd like to ask the students in the room is, what does this college really mean to you, City College, and the accessibility? $46 a unit for some might be affordable, but for others it's no longer affordable. So what are your thoughts on that? Hi.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe. My name is Marjorie, and I just graduated from City College of San Francisco. And City College of San Francisco means the world to me. It saved my life. But I would like to comment on something that Megan said about amassing extra units. What people don't realize or ever stop to talk about is that City College of San Francisco has the longest sequence in the state. And so we're talking really about student persevering over a period of 4 to 5, 6 years, and they keep taking classes, and maybe they're done with all of their general ed, but they keep taking math and English because those are the classes needed to transfer. And so really, we keep talking about, you know, quality of curriculum. I see it as access, right? But really, we're talking about whether or not students can run like a 50-mile, you know, cross-country, you know, over a long period of time. Like, I find that there is no traditional student anymore. This is supposed to be a 2-year college. I was here for 5, right? So that's what we're dealing with, right? That's what a lot of us have dealt with. And then,
and can you talk about why you were here for 5?
So I am a non-traditional student. I come from a low-income family. I work. I have family to take care of. And this is the demographic, really, of San Francisco. We're all different. We don't come from these really privileged neighborhoods, right? Like, we're here because we have San Francisco values for pursuing an education, and we want to be, you know, effective in some way and really contribute to society. And you keep bringing up graduation, and I hate to say it, numbers do tell a story. And unfortunately, they don't highlight success, but the numbers that highlight failure are sometimes very real. Low-income students, minority students, are not making it to graduation. Mm-hmm. So you keep saying, how do we get ready for graduation? Well, I'm sorry, we're trying to add an English 1A class.
Right.
We're trying to add a Math 90 class, right? So this is what this is about, and these are, it can't be isolated to this one specific variable. There are multiple things at play. The longest sequence in the state, cuts in budgets, teachers that are overworked, students are coming back to school 2-3 times, you know, to be retrained. We're importing jobs from other places because we're not encouraged to study math or sciences. So everyone's interested in English and liberal arts these days because no one is encouraged to really pursue what they're really interested in. I mean, I'm sure that Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook founder, wasn't thinking, oh my God, this is going to be something where I'm going to take over the world like Pinky and the Brain. Like, that's not how this started. He pursued something he loved. And we're not encouraged to do that because 5 or 6 years after being here, we're like, oh my God, I need a job. Mm. I can't keep working retail. I can't keep waiting tables. I need a job. And we grow old here. I mean, that's just the story of what we go through. I think some people in the room, like our trustee, Will Walker, he had to come back. He was already a success story. He had to come back. And this is the story and most of us are going through.
The last time we broadcast live from the college, we were meeting a lot of students who graduated from UC, but because they couldn't pay off their loans, they had to come back to City College to defer their loans. Yeah. Are you also seeing a lot of that?
Well, I don't know that personally. Yeah. That may happen. So I just transferred to a UC. And
oh, you did?
So I don't know.
Where are you?
I can't speak to that.
Where are you going now?
UC Santa Cruz.
Okay.
UC Santa Cruz. I'm very excited about that. But this place harbored my mind. This place saved my life. And education is the great equalizer. And I find that in all of these conversations, we keep trying to find the Achilles heel that is responsible. There are multiple things at play.
Right.
Systemic, like a systemic overhaul is really what we're needing, I think.
And if you're talking frankly about someone like somewhere like a Stanford or a private school, they've got major connections.
Yeah.
Those students have a door in.
Yeah.
Almost automatically.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Daniel.
Right, so you're speaking to internships, right, student experience. But if we're here for 5-6 years, I don't have the time to go get that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still trying to add an English 1A class. I'm trying to add a Math 90 class. So I don't have the time to really go off and say, I'm going to go to D.C. and intern at the OEOB. Like, I don't have time for that. Like, I'm trying to add a class here because I need to transfer. Right? I mean, if you go on the San Jose State website, on their survival tips in the FAQ section, one of the lines says, how to get a BA in under 7 years. This is San Jose State. So San Jose State, which is, I would assume, is a little bit more restrictive access. Now, City College of San Francisco is open access. You know, and don't ask me how I know that. I just kind of do. I'm a geek.
Well, thank you. So, yeah. Thank you for your comments. We only have a couple minutes left. Quick response.
Yeah. So
Daniel.
San Jose State, we have several minority students. And I can speak to your story. That's also my story. I'm a first-generation college student. And it's taken me 8 years to get my degree. So I know the barriers you've had to go through. I also worked full-time the entire time supporting myself. And so all I can say to you is that it is hard. It is challenging. And you say you didn't have time for student clubs, activities, internships. But I found time. And that's all I had to do was make time for it.
Okay, we have just about 10 seconds. Go ahead.
I'll be 10 seconds.
Yes.
My name is William Walker. I'm the student trustee for the college. The question becomes, when do we stop saying 8 years is okay?
Right.
I think that's the dialogue that needs to happen statewide, if not nationwide.
Well, thank you. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but we will definitely continue this conversation. And that's a great point that you just made there. I want to thank all of you, Daniel Newell, Job Development and Marketing Specialist at San Jose State, Alex Hockman, Assistant Director of Career Services at USF, and Megan Corey, Paramedic Program Director here at City College of San Francisco. Thank you all for joining us. And I want to thank our producers for the show, Becca Hoekstra and Malihe Razazan. Our engineers are Eric Marr and Phil Hartman. Our general manager is Matt Martin. Our theme music was composed by Live Human. Thanks to the students of KCSF 90.9, Mateus Godinez, Frank Spencer, Touche Contreras, Jerry Weatherford, Ricky Olmos, and Patricia Morin. Francine Podensky is the broadcasting department chair, and Dr. Cecile Hale is the general manager. Thank you. And thank you all in the audience for coming. Thank you for your comments. And thank you so much for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Thanks for listening.
Been listening to a live broadcast of Your Call from the City College of San Francisco. I'm Matt Martin, here with Joe Burke, and we're going to be in just a few minutes going back to City College for an hour talking about the crisis at City College and the accreditation concerns there that may actually close the school down, of great concern to people here in the Bay Area. Of course, that's an institution that has educated so many people, provided so many opportunities, and we invite you to stay here for that conversation, which is made possible by listeners. Here at KALW, three-quarters of our budget comes directly from people who listen. If you believe in these kind of conversations and you want to see them continue, please join us in our fall membership campaign. The number to call is 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or online at kalw.org. We are glad to be connected and engaged with this community. This is an asset, this station that has been grown by people here in the Bay Area for over 70 years, and we're asking you right now, whether you've been a longtime listener or you're just discovering the station, to be with us, to be one of the people who says, yes, we want to have radio from the grassroots that convenes important conversations and gives us a chance to talk to one another about how we make a better community. Your support at 800-525-9917 makes that possible. In this membership campaign, we're keeping the programming uninterrupted. That's why we'll be going back to Rose and her team in just a moment. So right now is the time to show your support. We have an open line at 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. The folks at City College have helped us put together this broadcast today. And, of course, we collaborate with a number of other organizations around the Bay Area, like Youth Radio, Burton High School. We're working on teaching young people about radio, giving them a chance to be heard on the station. Also, local broadcast partners like the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco that produces Bina, or the Commonwealth Club that brings you Inforum. These are great local resources, and KALW is here to amplify the best of this area. Your support is the critical connection that we have to the community. Be part of it now. 800-525-9917.
Or online at kalw.org. Today we are in our fall membership campaign. The pledge drive will continue for the next few days, and we're inviting you to become a member, a supporter of local public radio. 800-525-9917.
And any contribution that comes in at any level, you can get the Smiley and West DVD when Tavis Smiley and Cornell West were hosted by KALW earlier this year.
Interviewed by Rose.
That's right. Great Q&A with Rose Aguilar. Any level of support, we'll send you that as a thank you. 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
It's 11 o'clock, and this is Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco, online, KALW.org.